With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Greetings to you, my sweet, sweet darlings. It is I, D. Trussell, reporting in from my podcast studio at Raytheon in Los Angeles. I'm here visiting. I have podcast studios all over the country, much the same way the United States has military bases all over the planet. I just want to make it so that anywhere I go, if I need to record a quick intro for my podcast, I can do that. And I want to thank the folks over at Raytheon for making that possible. Does it suck to ride an elevator over 7 miles to the depths of the earth in a deep underground military bunker and take a tram, which, by the way, is very slow? I know they could do better. They're fucking Raytheon. Over 5 kilometers to a vacuum-sealed chamber where I'm currently recording this episode. Yeah, it does. It takes a big chunk out of time that I'd rather be spending working out, that I'd rather be spending jogging, that I'd rather be spending practicing the new male-only sport of burrowing. Now, I don't mean that in a misogynist way. It just hasn't caught on with the ladies yet. I'm sure it will. For those of you unaware of the sport, essentially you get together with a bunch of your guy friends, you strip down, and you burrow as far as you can into the exterior of a muddy hill. It's dangerous. Sometimes the hills will collapse, and sometimes the bodies are never recovered because they get sucked down into the earth. And that's one of the things I love about working here at my podcast studio beneath Raytheon, is that we can actually use this incredible LIDAR technology that sends some kind of signal into the earth. And I've been able to identify over 15 people that I was competing with where their body is. And it's incredible how fast the earth will suck a naked man down into its core. Regardless, I'm excited to be out on the road again. It's nice to be back in Los Angeles. Missing Los Angeles. It's tough to be out here and see these beautiful green hills and the interstate from my hotel room. The hills I don't miss so much, but God knows, man, that LA traffic. That's the reason many people come to this great city. I certainly did not come for that reason. Originally, I came because I was forced to because of some divorce bullshit, but gradually I fell in love with the traffic and would make it a practice to get out there every day, find the thickest clot of traffic using, in those days we didn't even have iPhone technology. We didn't have maps or GPS in the normal sense. So you just had to get lucky, call some of your friends. Hey, did you see any good traffic out there? Watch the news. But yeah, just get out there in a nice thick clump of hardcore Los Angeles traffic, put on some Vivaldi, pull my pants down. No one would see it. I had very thickly tinted windows in those days, and just spray a variety of condiments onto my genitals. And that was a typical morning in Los Angeles. So yeah, it's tough to be out here. Did I rent a car when I got here? You bet I did. You bet I did. And so at least for a moment, before I had to get down here in this bunker filled with the most obnoxious aliens you've ever met, I got to experience what LA really meant to me, what it really was, which is that, just that, you know what I'm talking about, everybody, that nothing's quite as pleasant as just a nice chilled mayonnaise jar being dumped right on to your penis or whatever you got down there. Just activates you, clarifies some things, helps you understand, yeah, I am a person. Yeah, I have wants, needs, habits, things I react to, things I don't react to that I probably should be. But underneath it all, what am I really? I'm basically a Caesar salad. I'm just a sandwich. I'm just a bowl of lukewarm French fries that needs a little something extra from the outside world. And that's not money. That's not fame. That's not power. For me, it's either mayonnaise or sometimes blue cheese, Hellman's blue cheese. It just touches that place inside of you, the place you always wanted to be touched. And lots of us try to touch that place using methods that aren't healthy, that aren't good for the community. Some of us try to touch that place by smoking crystal meth. Some of us try to touch that place using the glory hole path, which, by the way, I just released the third edition of the glory hole path. It's available on Amazon. I hope you check it out. But when you find out that all you're searching, all you're putting yourself out there to feel again, to crack through that shell of numbness that you've come to understand as who you actually are, all of that was wasted because you could have just gone to the grocery store in Calabasas or Sherman Oaks, picked up your condiment of choice, gotten out there in the thick of traffic, and blasted yourself down. Like Jesus reaching into the tomb of Lazarus, pulling out Lazarus, his genitals covered with Grey Poupon, or whatever it was that Jesus sprayed on his junk to wake him from the dead. That's how you'll feel, resurrected, born again. And you will go back out in the world with a new perspective that you didn't have before. You'll look out and you'll see so many people suffering just like you were. So many people in the rat race looking for an old bit of cheese. So many people out there with an unquenchable hunger, a thirst that they cannot satiate no matter what they do. And you're going to want to go up to them and say, hey, have you tried just spraying a bottle of ketchup all over your balls or under your taint? And you'll probably do it. I sure did. Lots of us did. But you'll find out that people don't want to hear the truth, that they're not ready for it. They don't want to realize that the point of it all here on this, as Carl Sagan called it, pale blue dot, it's not to control the world. It's not to live in some mansion with models snorting endless rails of ketamine while you play versions of God of War that haven't even been released yet. No. And it's not going into nature. It's not taking your bag of crystals and your handmade sandals to Niagara Falls, meditating in some beautiful mountain temple, ziplining. And it's not about having kids. It's not about discovering the love that you feel when you see your baby for the first time. It's not about eating. It's not about listening to your dumb animal body when it screams out for food after you haven't eaten for a couple of days. No. It's about getting in that car, getting into traffic, and spraying condiments all over the most sensitive part of your body. With us here today is the brilliant Raghu Marcus. He's one of my favorite guests on the DTFH. I love him so much. He is the administrator of the Love Serve Remember Foundation. He's the one who helps organize all the retreats and all of the insane work that that foundation is doing out there. Also, of course, he's my friend. He's one of my teachers in the world. He's someone who has actually sat with Neem Karoli Baba, the great Indian saint. And I always love it when we get a chance to hang out on the podcast. But first, if you want commercial-free episodes of this podcast, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/family hour and subscribe. You'll get zero commercials in every episode, along with access to our Discord server and our weekly family gatherings, or mostly weekly family gatherings, as well as our weekly meditation group, Journey into Boredom. So check it out. It's patreon.com/family hour. If you happen to be listening to this the week of February 23rd, I'm going to be in San Jose at the San Jose Improv this Saturday and Sunday with William Montgomery. So won't you come out to a show, please? I'd love to see you. Okay, everybody. Welcome back to the DTFH, Raghu Marcus.
Here we are. We are live.
Raghu, welcome to the DTFH. It's good to see you again. You seem very glowy. What's going on over there? Is it some kind of Zoom age reversing filter? You've been doing yoga. I guess no. You always do yoga.
I don't do yoga ever. Are you kidding? I do Pilates. I like Pilates.
Oh, wow. There's a biscuit. Yeah, so yeah. You never really got into the yoga thing. That's surprising, seeing as how you're surrounded constantly by yogis.
Well, yoga is asanas, right? Doing various positions that enhance the flow in one's body. Yeah. No, I have not been a big, although what I do includes some yoga, actually. It's like a Pilates yoga combo that I figured out. So, it's core. It's all about core, especially when you get older.
There's something I've been meaning to ask you about. So at the retreat, we watched that. And what's the name of the movie you made? I'm sorry, I can't remember the name. I can't remember anything anymore. What's the name of the movie you made?
You and me both, so brother. Good. Yeah, Brilliant Disguise, the Samadhi of K.C. Tewari, our mentor from back in the day.
Such a good movie, so intense. But there was a scene in it that is just, I keep bringing it back. And maybe you could sort of describe this scene, but there's a story of Neem Karoli Baba. I guess he's at the base of some mountain with KC and some other people, and these orbs appear.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell that story from the documentary?
Yeah. Basically, this temple ashram was in a valley with, you know, high mountains all around. Not the snow caps, right? The foothills, but they're still like 7,000-8,000 feet, you know, 9,000 feet. So around this particular valley, at the top of it, there have lived yogis in caves, right? We knew about it back then, and really only one actually died only a few years ago. So they're sitting there, Tewari and Neem Karoli Baba, and I think it's getting towards dusk, or it's dusk, something like that. And that suddenly these orbs that look like saucers come flying from one side of the mountains across the valley to the other. And Tewari said this was some phenomenal experience of seeing these things. And basically, one of the Westerners who actually was did the interview with Tewari in that circumstance said he knew of, there was a specific name of an ancient yogi who had lived up there. And supposedly can manifest in any different way that yogi wanted to, in terms of having a body, not having a body, becoming light, and so on and so forth. I think his name was, it was a rishi, Garg Rishi, now that I remember.
What's a rishi? What does that mean, a rishi?
Rishi is a sage, like an enlightened sage. This, you know, just the Vedas and everything came from these rishis, right? Emanated through them.
Okay.
So anyhow, So he said this was, you know, probably what was happening, that they had these powers. And Maharaji, in that moment, I guess, opened up Tiwari and others, whoever was around, their third eye to be able to see it. That's my conjecture. I have no idea. But Maharaji said, what, are you making these things out? Do you think, like, I can do something? You're making me out to be a miracle worker? What the fuck? That's what he said about it.
But this is pretty classic for him. Like, he consistently denied having any kind of extraordinary powers to people, and was always saying, it's not me, it's Ram, it's God, it's not me.
Yeah.
But the reason of all the amazing miracle stories of Neem Karoli Baba, the reason this one really stuck out to me is because these orbs, you know, this is something that people like in the UFO community or people under UFOs, they talk about these orbs. One of the threads in the discussion of whatever these things are is that they show up around certain people. Like, there's some people, for whatever reason, when you're around them, they appear. And I just thought it was really curious. And I wondered if you had if you ever saw them around him, or if you've ever seen whatever these things are.
No, never saw anything like that. And I do believe that the reality of being able to connect with phenomena on other planes that are interacting with our plane here, our material plane, that reality is, for me, a given. But it infers to be able to be open somewhat psychically, to be able to see these. I bet these people have that kind of an ability. And they're open in that way. But in this sense, that's the power of a being like Neem Karoli Baba, who's no longer bound by polarity and is just part of whatever it is that we call this universe. Then there is the ability to have people being able to have that experience and being able to be open, to be able to see. And maybe what some of the UFO stuff that goes on and people experiencing, maybe part of it is these rishis, or, you know, rishis is just a word that was used in the East. You know, there could be, you know, brujos or whatever, you know, in South America that are able to actually live on beyond coming in and out of a body. You know, there is, that's proven stuff, certainly from India and from the East, and they manifest this. And maybe that's part of what people are saying, are seeing, not are experiencing. Maybe at the same time, it's also true that we are getting visited, and that's not even a question, I guess, with all of the what's coming out more recently around UFOs and so on. How the reality of them is unquestionable. So it's a combination of all this stuff, I guess. Can I do a commercial before you go on?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Just that movie, Brilliant Disguise, is now available on Amazon, Google Play, Apple, and Vimeo. Just for a rental fee, you can stream it, and it's well worth
it. It's really, really good. Y'all should watch it. It's really, really good. I don't know. There's a lot of theories regarding why
all of this.
One of them being, it's because what's happening is we have the technology to record stuff that is moving very fast, or to pick up on things that might be cloaking themselves or something like that. And now we're starting to be able to do it. The other one is that, the upsurge is because something crazy is about to happen on the planet. And so they're all sort of gathering to show up for whatever this event is or whatever it may be. But I love, you know, that is that's what I was thinking, you know, watching it. It's like, oh, wow, that would be so curious and wild. Like, all this whole time we're thinking these things are from another planet, and they're just people living on the planet who have been able to do this forever.
Yeah.
And now we're just we have the technology to record it that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
Everyone's
like I said, I think it's both. I think it's the ability for transcending off this plane on this planet is, to me, you know, pretty much the same thing for somebody who lives on another planet and way advanced and has the ability to transcend limitations that we are just starting to really work through scientifically here, no?
Well, yes. And I mean, the UFO phenomena or whatever, I mean, we call it UFOs now, but in the Vedas, there's reference to, I don't remember what they call them, some kind of sky chariots people could fly around in, that they had these, there's some lost technology back then that allowed them to do stuff. There's, in India, there's an area that was referenced in the Vedas that I think has like radioactive material there that would have, one way it would have been generated was from an atomic blast. And so there's references to some kind of weird weapon they had back then, or some war thing that they had back then. So who knows? I mean, who knows? The planet is very old.
It's all possible is the one thing, honestly, that I am firmly, I believe experientially positive that it is all possible. There isn't anything that is impossible. Now, of course, we've seen it with this particular being, Neem Karoli Baba, transcending time and space and all of that kind of stuff. And that certainly just reinforces the fact that it's all possible. I meet so many people through the work that I do as the director of Love, Serve, Remember Foundation, because I insisted to be able to see, even though it's overwhelming to a large degree, all of the mail that comes to info@ramdas.org. And the level of different realities for people, how they're experiencing this stuff, especially Ram Dass isn't here anymore physically, is just wild. I mean, wild. It's all possible, you know, and some of it is completely woohoo, right? And some of it is just wild projections, or it's a combination of real projections and woohoo. I mean, you know, you just don't know. That's that great story, Ram Dass. You never know, you know, you just never know. It looks like it's something and then it's something else. You don't know.
Right.
And, yeah. So you got to go behind all of that bullshit.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you.
I mean, this is this is one of the, when I was getting to know you when we first started to become friends. This was one of the more surprising aspects of your personality to me, is that I don't want to call it cynicism, but you're very skeptical regarding a lot of this stuff. Like, whereas like lots of people in that community and in other fringe, if you want to call them that, or outside default reality communities, I guess you could say, they're more willing to just accept this or that, the story that someone says or an experience they might have had or whatever, as being proof of just what you're talking about. But you're not like that. Like, you seem, do you think this is a result of having spent your entire life hanging around people on really good acid? At some point you're just like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think you walked through the wall. I don't think you emanated a golden light. I don't think you levitated. I think you were just high.
But I've seen the golden light, so to speak. I've seen the reality of the complete possibility of transcendence in any moment. I've seen it. I've, you know, of course, because I saw Neem Karoli Baba, and day to day over a period of time, it was all just became a reality, and it just shattered my, you know, mind. But you know what you're talking about, cynicism. Yeah, you know, I love Larry David, so I guess, you know, like, I could never get Ram Dass to watch Larry David. He was too off the wall for Ram Dass. He was too, you know, nasty. You know, so I work on why I have this thing that I really love that stuff, dark humor, you know, all of it. And but so in this movie, Brilliant Disguise, there's one part which speaks exactly to what I think you're alluding to. And that's Neem Karoli Baba sends Casey Tewari, right, who's protagonist in this movie, Brilliant Disguise, it's about him, to go over to a fire ceremony that was happening at the time where they were propitiating maybe the divine mother goddess thing. So you go over there and do that. So he's over there, and nobody knows how to do that better than this man in terms of actually doing a ritual where whatever you're propitiating, whatever you're calling down, comes down. I mean, I've never seen it any other time in my life except with this man. I mean, it's just extraordinary. So he's out there.
What do you mean, whatever comes down, comes down?
The divine presence that's within whatever we're calling that Shiva. Or in his case, he spent a lot of time invoking Shiva and Durga, the mother. That was his pujas were centered in that way. So when you're sitting there, when you're sitting there with him and he's invoking it's in the movie, you can see what him completely going out. You know, I mean, this is somebody who we would be sitting with him and he went into a state, a trance state called samadhi, that there was no pulse and no breath. Okay. You read about it in ancient mystical books forever, but when it's right there, it's mind-blowing. Anyhow, so this is a person who did that, and he could do it when he was invoking. So if you were sitting with him and he was doing this ritual invoking the divine presence of whoever it may be, you absolutely felt that in your body as it came down. Okay, period. Right. You know. Yeah. And then after a while, I'd get tired. And he'd say, yeah, just go sleep. He'd do it all night. And I'd have to go sleep on his bed in India because I couldn't handle it. You know, it was just.
What did it feel like?
Like density.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that's the first thing that happens in absorption in a meditative state, density. And it happened to me when I was 9 years old. I didn't understand it until I first started meditating when it happened again. I went, holy shit, this happened when I was a kid. You know, you weigh like 2,000 pounds all of a sudden. And there's this, anyhow. So here's the story.
No, wait, don't keep describing it. You weigh 2,000 pounds and there's what?
You weigh 2,000 pounds and then there is this sweeping thrill of kind of like when you start to just start peeking on psychedelic.
Yeah.
Does your whole body gets filled? It's dense, dense, dense. Then suddenly it gets filled with like particles of it's ineffable. That'll tell you what it is. Joy. Yeah. It's a stupid, you know, there's only stupid words to describe it. But there is a vibratory thing that happens inside you. And then this kind of spaciousness that happens at this time is extraordinary, where you stop having boundaries and you're going out of your body. So
there, you, this thing, there's levels of this is I can't remember the name. In Buddhism, this is described. It's a practice you could do in meditation that starts with you putting your attention, like when you're meditating. You know, some people when they're meditating, maybe they'll get to the very edge of it where you start feeling a good feeling, like basically like it's a nice, maybe it's in your heart if you're doing metta practice, your peace. Hands maybe.
Peace is there, yeah.
Just and you start peace putting and your attention on that.
Yeah.
And it starts off, and so the first phase of it is what you're describing. It's this sort of radiating, joyful warmth thing that happens that can get really intense, vibratory even, like you touched a light socket, and then it's followed by what you're talking about, the next, and it continues to become increasingly like more expansive or something. I don't know. I don't know about that.
That's a good generalization for going into a meditative absorption state, sure. But Tiwari would completely gone. There was no, he would come back after a while and he would get, this would happen under any circumstances. It didn't have to happen that he was meditating at all. I mean, around Maharaji, around Neem Karoli Baba, he'd just look at him, boink, he was gone. And then he'd look at us and go, what happened to him? What's going on here? You know, and he would just dive us. He was like having fun. Anyhow, back to the story, okay? Story of being, he was sent to do this ritual, you know, not that far from Maharaji, you know, like 30 yards or something. So he's doing it and he's completely into it. And then suddenly he hears Maharaji like shouting, what are you doing there? What are you wasting? You know, we're going to die here of hunger because you're doing this bullshit? Stop. Okay, who would, this was the kind of, so when you talk about rascality, when you talk about cynicism, you talk about, I don't know, only some of the Tibetan masters, you know, and only like Shirdi Sai Baba, who's one of the great Siddhas of India, and, you know, left in 1918, 15, something like that. Only they had that thing. There was no positive, negative, right? They were beyond polarity completely. So there was, in Maharaji's case, he had an irreverence, okay? What was important to him was bust the caste system, feed people, you know, don't make them sit around and pray. And then, you know, that was who he is, actually. And so that irreverence and stuff, and, you know, it was in Ram Dass's humor. It's in, you can see it in the film with me and Krishnadas going back and forth about our experience and so on and so forth. But there are so many stories of
it, this. It doesn't have sanctimony. It's like, what's cool, it's like, because you would think that whatever these rituals are, whatever the ceremonies, it didn't start with the rituals and the ceremonies, but it was a byproduct of that state that Neem Karoli Baba or the cities are in. Once you're in that state, you start doing things, and maybe some of those things over time turn into the rituals that people replicate throughout the world. But the first people to do those things, it's inside out, right? Not outside in, like, and it seems like Neem Karoli Baba was trying to get to the nucleus of what any of this stuff is all about, because you can control a ritual, you know, you can control a ceremony, you can even trick yourself into thinking that you're doing something particularly special because you have managed to bring down some energy or summon orbs or whatever. But all of that is sort of an exterior, a shell or something around something that's much bigger, right?
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the point. It's like people who want to, I'm going to meditate my ass off and something's going to happen. I have an expectation that something will happen. And that's, especially in the West, is such a common way, you know, this is how we are. It's goal-oriented stuff. It has nothing to do with how, you know, which is why you'll hear Krishnadas talk about this and me and others of us. It's about, you know, how can you be a little bit more kind, you know, a little bit more compassionate and loving, you know, as a human being.
This is what the paradox of the path or whatever people are calling it these days is, that rather than shifting you into a state of, you know, the what we've all been heard a million times, being kind to yourself, loving yourself, forgiving yourself, you know, letting go of all that neurotic bullshit, it doubles the neurosis. Like, you start off a neurotic and you're like, I this is unbearable. I'm going to start meditating, chanting, going to Ram Dass retreats, listening to Ram Dass audiobooks, taking ayahuasca, whatever it is. And somewhere in that process, all of a sudden another level of neurosis appears, where now you're walking around like, oh, I'm profane. I've fallen. I'm so impure. I'm horrible. So now it's double horrible. You already thought you were horrible by some intuition. You're doubling the horrible by this practice or this thing you're calling a practice.
Oh, here's another story. This is great. This addresses exactly that. Exactly. This is great. So Krishna told me this story, and he's repeated it a couple of times. He goes to Maui when Ram Dass was alive, and every Monday Ram Dass would go swimming at a beach in Maui. You know, he loved to do that because weightlessness for somebody who's been in a wheelchair for 22 years was phenomenal. So anyhow, he went there, and he got there late, and suddenly Ram Dass is sitting in his car when he drove. Nobody else is around. Krishnadas walks up to him, and he looks through the window, and he sees he looks awful, like depressed or something. Yeah. And he turns to Krishnadas and he says, "We're all fakes. You're a fake too." And you know what Krishnadas came back with? "Yeah, but we're real fakes."
Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I love that story. Well, the thing is, you told me, I think about it all the time as a real fake. Obviously, we all love to hear that. I mean, but I used to watch this interview with God, what's his name? I love making fun of him. It really upsets people, even though I really like him. It's that guy. He got in an argument with Neem Karoli Baba, Krishnamurti.
Oh, yeah.
So Krishnamurti talking to Chogyam Trungpa and starts off the conversation with, "Why meditate? Life's complicated enough. Why are you adding this other thing that we all have to do? Like, what is that all about?" And I remember watching and really getting annoyed with Krishnamurti. But lately I keep thinking about, like, maybe he's right. Like, you know, why add another level of shit you got to do to your life before you can feel okay with yourself. Like, why do that to yourself? Why?
You're saying that. You're saying that? It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. These things, there's a wonderful balance. And just going back to the reality, there's of us being fakes, right? Yeah. Which is what you were describing before. You know, we do all this shit and we just, you know, start to feel like a complete moron.
Yeah.
Because we see ourselves doing all of it for the wrong reasons, basically.
Yeah.
So then we kill ourselves with judgment and so on. But the reality is, so the real fake is we know that. It's okay because we're just little human guys and gals. We know it.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And so we don't have to live that story, which just self-perpetuates based on the fact we have so much self-hatred, okay? We don't have to live that story. So there is that's what I mean by a balance. The balance is we're real fakes. We understand that we are doing this shit and we are self-identifying in all kinds of dark ways. It's okay. We're human. It's okay. And
yeah,
and
even that part's okay.
Yeah,
That to me, see, this is like, I love this line of contemplation because I think for me, that of all, I could hear stories about someone walking through a wall, turning into light, flying around the room, raising the dead. And I can be like, yeah, sure, I believe that could be possible. But just when it comes down to me and the idea of being just okay, like this is it. Like this is where you're at. This is it. It's probably
well, that sounds
get
interminable. Now, yeah, that's this is it in this moment. Okay, that
in
we
this
understand.
Moment, but you know what I mean? The times I've been able to, instead of constantly judging myself for whatever I'm doing that I consider to be out of line, the times I'm just like, no, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. I'm eating Butterfingers. I'm watching Forensic Files late at night. I'm staying up late eating Butterfingers, watching Forensic Files. And those times when instead of that being an issue, this is what I'm doing. I don't know if there's much of a difference between that state and states that have happened to me through like the best meditations. I don't know if there's much of a difference. It's just you're
nah,
you know what
that's
I mean?
When bullshit. That's an intellectualization.
Okay.
Come on,
now,
you
I'm
don't
saying
know.
When you fully become yourself, when you fully become blended in to the waveform of your karma and what you are, and this is where you're at, and all of it, the whole thing, whatever the fuck it is, all of it, including the self-reflective guilt, shame, bullshit, all of it, instead of resisting it, you're just, this is what I am right now. This is it.
Yes, yes. Fully accepting the moment.
That's an incredible moment. That's an incredible moment because that is not what many of us consider to be a holy moment. When you said earlier, it happened at the transcendent experience or the possibility of waking up or whatever you want to call it. When people hear that, they picture the fire ceremony. They picture the flowers floating in the sea. They picture the sound of temple bells. They don't picture the Forensic Files narrator going on in the background in some hotel room in Nashville. But I think it can happen there just as much, which is why Neem Karoli Baba made a point of popping those bubbles so many times, why he was always popping any bubble someone was inflating around, elevating this moment compared to that.
Yeah, and but as me, much that was, as that's a bit of a, there's a bit of a stretch in there in terms of being a little bit too intellectual. The reality is that moment of the Forensic Files, that it all comes together, I am human, I am just watching the Forensic Files, it's all okay, is as real a moment as some transcendent meditative moment. Yeah, I'll go along with that. But my moment last night of watching a Dutch police show, okay, that was subtitled, okay, that's how far I went to watch this fucking thing.
It was
in Dutch. I'm not even sure that they're speaking German sometime. I can't get it. They did speak French at times, and I speak a little French. So me getting, you know, and I'm seeing my, I got the moment. Okay, are you really lying here watching this bullshit? You could be, as Larry David, you know, in that one scene when he got high on pot. Can't you read a book? Do you have to watch TV? What's going on? So I could be reading a wonderful, so I had that whole thing of like, you know, I'm tired. And then I went through all the excuses for why I just got to lay here. I can't, you know, maybe I'd watched more than 5 minutes of Joe Biden on television last night, yeah, in the speech, and people calling him out, you know, fucking liar. I mean, it's insane what's going on. Anyhow, so that's that moment, and it's a legitimate moment, and I have all the compassion for myself being in this moment and indulging that particular way. Forensic Files is just this kind of parallel, actually, show.
Yeah.
And then this morning where two lines of the Hanuman Chalisa that I chanted as part of my practice this morning became completely transparent. I got him. I got what, you know, and it just, the spaciousness. So it just was so self-evident. It was just a wonderful moment, you know. It was just two lines out of the whole. There's 40 verses of the, just two of them. So that moment, you're saying it's the same moment. It's the same moment. The moment of compassion for yourself in the moment, and then it's the moment of transcendence through a ritual of some sort. And I totally agree with you on one level. On another level, the reality of wanting to change, wanting to not be any longer, have any kind of paranoia, fear, separation, yeah, is powerful enough to do something about it, regardless if the fact is that it's all written, so to speak. You are going, whatever's going to happen to you in terms of being able to transcend some of the kalashas, right, the impediments of our existence, greed, lust, yeah, anger, blah blah blah, the desire to do that means to use some of these practices in order to have an opportunity to transform yourself,
yeah,
through the help,
yeah,
of the universe. It is real as what you're saying. It's all parallel.
Okay. So I'm going to push back, though. I do, anytime you or David accuse me of saying bullshit, I generally secretly agree with you, but let me just push back a little bit. I'll use a different example. In the psychedelic community, something that has emerged, which I don't think existed back when you were getting blasted on that incredible LSD that I will be perpetually jealous. You got to meet Neem Karoli Baba. You took acid that was given to you by the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. Great karma. But back then, when people were taking acid, and maybe they were saying this, I don't know if there was as much talk about healing, medicine. When you were taking acid at a acid test in the 60s with Ken Kesey, no one is saying, I'm using this to treat my trauma, PTSD. No one's calling it medicine. Okay. And the reason that I've always felt a little like bummed by though I respect it and I'm glad it's happening because it leads us closer to the end of the prohibition. But the reason I've always felt slightly bummed by this sudden putting psychedelics into this cabinet of medicine is because this is by taking a medicine, you're implying you're sick. And so when in the spiritual community, the parallel of that is you're fucked up, man, and you want out of this thing. And so here's what you do to get out of it. Here's your medicine. It's the mantra. It's the Hanuman Chalisa. It's the meditation. And so even if you're not aware, that's what you're thinking. If that's how you get into it, then you are putting yourself in a sand trap where to continue to do these practices that are incredible. And I know those moments you're talking about in the early morning when you've finally gotten your shit together enough to do your puja or your meditation or whatever it may be, drink water instead of coffee in the morning. The sun is just starting to rise and suddenly it comes down. What you're talking about, it comes down and it's not what you expected. It's way bigger than your human brain could even comprehend, but instantly familiar and the most beautiful thing. It's your mom, it's your kids, it's all of it together, but there's nothing there but you and the earth. So I know what you're talking about, but when you get into that, because you have this sense of wrongness in your heart, I got to be compassionate to myself. Why do you have to be compassionate to yourself? Well, because I'm fucked up. It's like you end up accidentally affirming and potentially attaching yourself to a broken quality, a brokenness, a malfunctioning quality. And then it's the same thing could start happening to a psychedelic, someone who loves psychedelics or someone who loves spirituality that happens to comedians, where you'll hear a comedian say, I don't want to get better. Because if I get better, I won't be funny anymore.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be funny anymore. So the same thing repeats in this way. Instead of removing this constant, never-ending, I'm fucked up, heal me, help me, make me better, acid, make me better, Maharaji, make me better, whatever, art. Instead of being like, no, you're fine. Oh my God, you're fine. You're better than fine. In fact, you're great. There's nothing wrong with you at all. Anything you've been doing is just absolutely okay. It's okay. Oh boy. See, there's a part of me that doesn't like that. You know what I mean? I don't like that. I don't want to be okay.
Oh God.
I don't want to be fine, because if I'm fine, then that means this is it. In this moment.
And then
this is
that's
it.
Not a good plan. I get it. I know. I feel for you, actually.
See, there you go. You don't feel though. This is what I'm talking about. There's, I think, and again, I'm so good at interpreting shit to gratify myself, but yeah. In these stories of Holy Baba, that's what I keep hearing. I keep hearing that. I keep hearing, no, you're okay. No, you're okay. You're fine. You're okay. You're all right. You're fine. And that is the one little bit of the teaching is the most difficult to digest, to process. That's the koan. That's the thing where it's like you will slam into the wall of your attachment right there, because your problem is an attachment to vaping, to Dutch police dramas, to forensic files. Your problem is you're attached to the fucking idea that you're a mess when you're not.
Golly Moses, that's why I'm a mess. West Side Story. holy shit. And by the way, me, you know, poor you is poor me. We are all doing what you do. We are all doing the same thing. It is not different.
I wouldn't even be having these thoughts if not for associating with you people. I mean, that's the thing. I'm saying, like, this is years and years of hanging out with y'all, and years and years. This is like what, like, as I get even like somewhere close to the proximity of loving myself, within it, I just realize, you know what, you're gonna have to give up. You're going to have to give up not loving yourself. You're going to have to give up that the fraudulence is in that you're acting like a holy person and you're not. The fraudulence is that you're acting like you're a piece of shit when you're not. That's the fraudulence.
Yes, but you're real. It's real fraudulence. We just had that story. It's real fraudulence. Why? Because fortunately, we have and been granted this wonderful karma of having mindfulness, okay, and being on that part of the practice that most of us engage with, which I highly recommend to absolutely everybody, is having awareness of the kind you are speaking to, that we fucking hate ourselves, that we judge ourselves all day long, that we do practices and so on because we want to get, you know, an A on the exam, that we have a perspective that we see, fortunately, that looks out at life from that complete separation angle. We are separate individuals from everything and anybody, and therefore we see that, and we see the fear we have and the defensive mechanisms with everybody around us and the manipulations that we do to get what we want. We see it so clearly. It's just, it can be just over the top. And so let's accept that. We have that.
Well, then you have kids, but I'm saying that will remedy some of the guilt you might have about being manipulative. Because you're like, what? How did I turn into this manipulative thing? Then you have kids. They're fresh out of time space. And they've barely been able to talk. And they, right away, they start lying, manipulating, for sure. Like, I'll come downstairs in Forest. I know that, like, in the morning, there's no way in hell that Aaron is like, Forrest, you can have another slice of your birthday cake before I have to drive you to school. We're going to give you just a lot of sugar right before I have to comb your hair and get your shoes on. But he will like look at me like an angel and be like, Daddy, Mommy said I could have a slice of birthday cake. And you're like, wow, that's incredible. You're gaslighting. You're three. You're gaslighting already. This is amazing. It's built into us, is what I'm saying. It's built into us. And so
that's the human quality. It's okay we're human is the mantra. It's okay we're human.
Okay, we're,
but that doesn't mean that the perspective of self-identifying with that cynical, separated, hurt individual it's erroneous. And
all this compassion to the separated, broken, hurt individual is actually, you know what you're doing every time you do that? I think you're sitting down and you're blowing your blow up doll. You're blowing up your blow up doll that you have been like of the neurotic you every time you're like, oh, I forgive you. You're just human. Blow it back up. Blow it back up.
You're going to do that until it explodes. We are doing that until it explodes.
Cool, that's cool.
We are doing that until it explodes.
Cool. That's cool. That's cool.
We just are, and that's just reality. And then the moment that we get awareness, which happens, and it can be through all the different means that we've been talking about, including psychedelics, and we get that awareness, and then we're able to back into the real place, which is more the intuitive place behind the mind and the thoughts and the stories and what you and I have been doing for years now, trying to put together from the movie of me to the movie of we, is exactly what we're describing. And I want to introduce this one thing that I mentioned to you earlier before we got on.
Okay.
So it's something called wise selfishness. So this guy, Dan Harris, many people know him. Dan's got a great show, 10% Happier. And he went to see His Holiness. And he thought in the way, he's saying, you know, selfishness, it's a bad rap, which for the most part is richly deserved. Nobody likes people who hog the ball or Bogart the joint. We see in those people a reflection of our own lurking capacity for greed. We say we care about others, but as George Carlin used to say, we still take the bread from the middle of the loaf. And then he goes on and says, research says that compassionate, generous people are happier, healthier, blah, blah, blah. Yet, we all need to have some self-interest. If we lived in a state of, and this is addressing exactly what, and you'll get this right away, state of perpetual altruistic concern, refusing to speak up for ourselves and generally being doormats, that would constitute, and he doesn't say the name, but what Trumpa Rinpoche calls idiot compassion.
Yeah.
That is, it just takes everything we've been just talking about in terms of reflection on ourselves and the way that we define ourselves, and then trying to give compassion to that horror that lies inside, that's idiot compassion, right?
So, idiot compassion.
Yeah. So he goes, yeah, it's compassion for all the wrong reasons. It's compassion for...
I think you could argue it's cowardice.
Cowardice. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So anyhow, he goes to India, you know, and he talks to His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, about it. And he has a theory. Exposing the false binary between selfishness and selflessness. He called it wise selfishness. We all have an inborn penchant for self-interest, His Holiness says. It's natural, nothing to be ashamed of. But, he says, yeah, a truly enlightened self-interest also means recognizing that acting in generous and altruistic ways makes you happier than solely being out for yourself does.
Right.
Okay, that's Ram Dass's thing. You live on more than one plane of consciousness at the same time. That's the key to all of this. He said, His Holiness says, thinking in a more compassionate way is the best way to fulfill your own interest. He added that his own practice was to think about benefiting other people as much as possible. The result, I get benefit. Altruism does not mean you completely forget your own interests. No, he said. And the important thing for wisely ambitious people, which you and I would kind of fall into that category along with most other people,
sure,
is to remember that other-oriented states, such as altruism and compassion, which you can think of simply as our innate capacity to care, pull you out. This is the key. Certainly, is the key for what we're trying to do with from the movie of me to movie of we. Pull you out of the exhausting loops of self-involvement into which we are so often thrust by modern society, with its emphasis on individualism, consumerism, and the frantic aggregation of likes for selfies. Okay, if you want to do selfishness better, work to cultivate a compassionate mindset. Research suggests that compassion and altruism are not unalterable factory settings, but skills to develop. So this goes back to, why do we meditate? Why do we follow mindfulness practices? We know this through neuroscience, we can actually change these neurotic tendencies and habitual patterns, and we can develop the skills that are innate. We do give a shit about each other. We really do.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, God damn right we do. I mean, if you care about yourself, you care about other people, because, you know, this thing you call yourself is just an imaginary friend you've invented anyway, right? It's just some bundle of karma that you've decided is you. So if you're caring about that, you're shoveling butterfingers into its mouth to try to make it happy as you watch Forensic Files, furiously masturbating to porn or whatever you're doing. You're serving somebody, you know, and I got to tell you, what you just read, it answered a question for me. Something I always wondered about, and something I know you have experienced, is anybody who gets into the spiritual universe has experienced. A spiritual person, they look great. They're wearing the spiritual clothes. Their skin is amazing. They can do the plow position in yoga. And yet somehow, leaking out of them is something so mean that seems to fly in the face of all of it. We're like, what the fuck is that? There's something in there that's like as mean, like there's a snake hiding in that beautiful, beautiful forest that you have so spent so much time cultivating. And I think I see what the snake is. I see what it is now. It's like, oh, I get it. You couldn't figure it out. You couldn't figure out a way to love yourself, really. You couldn't figure out a way to accept what you actually are. And because of that, you went outside in. You tried to cultivate like a good body, the right, you know, Birkenstocks, whatever the fuck it is, these amazing mala beads. Oh my God, these mala beads have been blessed by the seven saints of the seven holy mountains of earth. And because all of that, traveling to the seven holy mountains of earth to meet seven saints, to get them to bless your dumb mala beads was easier than having to deal with your own reality, to finding a way to like sync up with what you actually are. And so then that leaks out. So that thing you're talking about, wise selfishness is, yeah, first figure it out. Like, you've got to sync up with the way you are right now. Like, that's it. Do that. And then in the midst of that, yeah, do your experiments in benevolence with people around you. My God, what's better than cooking a nice meal for someone and watching them eat it and how happy they get and feeling the neuroreceptors, the synapses in your brain just spray pleasure chemicals out? Because obviously, like, how the hell did we make it this far as human beings on this planet? It wasn't from keeping food to ourselves, that's for sure. There's obviously built-in endogenous physiological reward mechanisms for doing the thing that is going to perpetuate the species. That's what he's talking about there. Yeah, and you shouldn't. But if you haven't figured out a way to deal with the fact that you're allowed to feel good, you're allowed to feel good, whatever you may be doing right now, you're actually allowed to just enjoy it. Trust yourself. Trust yourself that maybe this thing you're doing right now that is appalling on some level to some holy person you've invented in your mind is what you need to be doing right now. And then if you could do that, then I think the other stuff naturally would follow. You know, I'm just saying, I something happened where I recognized, my God, I've like managed to add another level of neurosis to my already neurotic mind by holding myself up against people like Neiman Crowley Bob. In the same way, you go to the ridiculous gym.
Yeah, I mean, he even says here, instead of measuring ourselves against the Dalai Lama, we can use him as a useful pole star. A reminder that we can all train our minds to make marginal but meaningful strides, really. I mean, this is just more simplistic reality. Even people like me, who fear they're irreparably black-hearted, and even you. So it's back to Ram Dass. You get to the point, it gets so heavy, you see all this bullshit in you. And you go, and in his case, you know, a great teacher. And you go, I'm fake. And you're fake too. You're fake, full of shit, going around the world singing kirtan. He didn't say that. He just said, you're fake. But Krishnadas broke the ice in a way that completely transformed the moment to realize by saying, yeah, but we're real fakes. In other words, we are okay with all of the perils of self-hatred, all of the perils of fear and separation. And it gets even more exaggerated when you are actually teaching with people and you have to be on the spot. Yeah, or you have to be on the spot when you go out and do your act.
But when I do my act, I don't have to like put. I'm not like trying to. I don't have like a pedigree. Like, when people are coming to see me do stand up, they're not coming to see me do stand up because I meditated with some.
No, but they're coming up to see. They're looking at you as a human that they are getting a certain kind of transmission from that's beyond the humor, because that's who you are. You are naturally doing that. That's why you get people coming up to you after too, you know, and speaking to you in ways that separate themselves from you as someone higher and all of that kind of stuff. So,
and you try to stop that as quick as you can. I mean, that's the job. It's like, and I think that if you really want to become if you really want to become the poisonous fake that maybe Ram Dass was worrying about, or that Ram Dass had gotten caught up in maybe whatever part of himself was that, then you stop doing that very necessary and kind of frustrating thing where as quickly as you can, you make them like knock your whatever idol they've constructed of you down. And I think that that's where you branch off in two different directions. If you stop deciding to do that, or even worse, you start believing that their projection is you, then oh my God. Yeah, that's now you're on your way to Jonestown, baby. Yeah. Now you're headed like down a dark shit path.
Yeah, but that's way beyond what we're talking about. That's, you know, those that's insanity. What we're talking about is all of us. Yeah, insanity. We're talking about, that's why I love this story. I love the way it happened with Ram Dass and Krishnadas. I love the way, because that's what Ram Dass represented his whole life, being honest with himself. So in that moment, he was just expressing his own fear and his own separation. And Krishnadas busted that, you know, by not responding in the, yeah, we're just fucked up. What are we going to do? You know,
Krishnadas is the master of that. Yeah, he's so good at that. And he's like throws these little throwing stars that will just completely like set you back on the path. It's so wild how good he is at doing that. It's really interesting. Real quick little things he says.
Yeah. And so I think this story, in other words, all I'm trying to say, this came out, and it's something you and I are repeating right now and remembering, and we're using it to reflect our own insecurity, our own fear of separation, our own self-reflective selfishness, and it serves as a purpose. It serves wonderfully.
I love it.
In being able to just like, okay, it's again, yeah, we are that, but at the same time, we are not that. We can live on both of those planes at the same time, which is wise selfishness, which is really what this is about.
So, you're selfish, just like you're, that's the way it is. And that's how you are right now. Not you. I mean, in general, if you're human, and, you know, I think this ties into what we're talking about. And I'm pretty sure it was Krishnadas who said this. You can trust people to be who they are. Yeah. Now that, you see, I think like once, I remember, I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
When I'm getting frustrated with people, when I'm like annoyed with people, or when someone's not meeting my expectations or following through with something maybe they said they would do, it's like, yeah, but that's not who they are. Like who they are is someone who maybe doesn't follow through with what they say they're going to do all the time. What they are is somebody who at this point in their life, in a lot of times those people are riddled with guilt for their inability to follow through with what they're going to do. They haven't gotten to the place where they're like, I'm authentically a slacker. I'm authentically a person who doesn't get shit done. So they're secretly just broken inside because they haven't embraced that part of themselves. I mean, this is what I mean. If you want to make that transit from the point of being able to have this not idiot compassion, but compassion for people, it's not going to come from having compassion for a person that isn't even there anyway, a person you've invented in your mind. It's going to come because you found a way to have real compassion for that part of you that is authentically selfish, depraved, profane, blasphemous, filthy, addicted, crazy. This isn't all you are, not all you are, but it sure as hell a big part of you. And it's not going anywhere until you address it. And the way to address it is not by ignoring it or beating it up. The way to address it is like, okay, what? Mm-hmm. Okay, you can live in the fucking basement. Mm-hmm. I know you're down there, and I'm leaving the door unlocked this time. I'm not going to keep opening the door and throwing slop down there to you like some kid in the deep South or in England or whatever. Remember, you know what they used to do? They used to take kids that had some disability and throw them in the fucking basement. It was a shame. And then they just like throw gruel down there, old like, I don't know, Oliver Twist shit down there. Throw them an old bit of leather and some coal. And they'd stay there their entire life, stinking up the house. So I think the move is to like recognize you've done the same thing. You've done the same thing to yourself.
Yeah.
Before you judge those people who put their kids in the attic or in the basement, recognize you got one in you that's just lonely as shit, and all it wants is for you to love it and to stop questioning why it does the shit it does, because it does those things because that's what it is. Then when you do that, oh my God, all of a sudden you can do that for other people for real. So that when someone's sitting in front of you do that for me.
To get to that, well, that's exactly it. To get to that realization where you're, what you're talking about, it takes a something, a fulcrum, a leverage to be able to get behind this self-identification that you're talking about. It takes a something. Now, it can be a conversation with a friend. I mean, you know, we've done this a billion times, you know, and it's enlightening for both of us. And it's going to a retreat. It's taking a psychedelic. It's reading a book. It's hearing a chant. It's whatever it is. But there is some fulcrum that just shifts the direction enough so that the perspective isn't lost the way it was. But to think that you are automatically just going to say, "I accept myself." And by the way, you know, you just hang out and we'll have a cup of tea occasionally, making friends with the demon, right? It's called. We can do that. To get there, there has to be a realization that at the same time as I'm allowing myself to be who I am and stop judging all of this stuff, and we're all doing that all the time, at the same time as that happens, me, I'm also singing the Chalisa after I had, you know, fucked up dreams all night from this horrific Dutch, German, I don't know what, Belgium, it was incredibly well done, and it took over my mind, and so I got up in the morning and I did my Chalisa at the same time knowing, okay, I watched the Dutch police show. Okay.
Two wings of the bird. It's like you gotta let yourself have the greasy, jizz-covered wing of the bird, but let yourself have you also have another wing, and maybe more than that. Maybe you're a biblical angel. You've got lots of different wings that are different things. Ram Dass's levels of consciousness. But yeah, I think like one of the hidden traps of spirituality is that you accidentally start hating yourself. You don't even know you're hating yourself. You're telling yourself, oh, I'm having compassion for myself. That's not compassion. Compassion doesn't feel like shit. When you're having compassion for yourself, it doesn't feel like shit. When someone's truly being compassionate to you, they're not secretly judging you, because that sucks.
It's much easier, by the way, with another person. You look in their eyes and you can see they're full of shit or they're not. You know, with us, we have so much garbage going on and layers that we don't even know sometimes that, you know, are we really, you're doing that. But you got to remember, this is all, and I go back to, this section of the movie we did with Ram Dass, Becoming Nobody. And Jamie, the director, you know, says to him, you know what? I wake up in the morning, I'm so fucked up that before anything happens, I am this primal fear in my stomach. You know, and Ram Dass said, it's your thoughts. No, before I even have a thought, I have this fear that runs, courses through my whole, it's your thoughts. It's coming from a thought. It's all a thought. It has no substance whatsoever, Jamie.
Yeah.
You know, and they have that conversation. That is what we're talking about, you know. So to grab on too much to all of the looking at oneself and seeing all this enormous, giant bullshit is another thought. It's another thought.
There you go.
Thought.
That's the story. Well, yeah. it's the thought is the story, right? This is I think one of the, as you start doing that thing where you stop running away from your freakish little English mutant living in your basement, and you start going down there and like spending time where you got with
that
it.
The end of the mutant guy in the
I
basement
don't know just
thing,
popped but... out of me, but it's like when you start spending more time with it, you realize, oh, this, everybody is sharing a basement like this. The way I describe my mutant boy might be different from the way you describe your mutant boy. My mutant boy might have fins or like gills or like an extra eye. Lady eats rats. Don't let the dog get down there because the dog won't come back. Your mutant boy might be different this via story, but the thing itself, I'm starting to think it's not different at all. That the core, what Jamie was talking about, or that core coal of suffering that is in us is absolutely identical. And that the way we get from the movie of me to the movie of we isn't via necessarily some benevolent embracing of all people, even though secretly you think most of them suck, but rather playing around with the idea that when you are experiencing that thing pre-story, you're experiencing humanity as a whole. This is the singularity of the human experience. Our connectivity is via, or potentially one of the modes of connectivity is via a recognition of our mutual, shared, non-different, non-unique suffering. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, 100 billion percent correct. Absolutely. And interbeing, we can call it, once we realize that. And of course, you know, psychedelics give you that big hit of interconnectivity and interbeing. And yes, we all, I mean, His Holiness says, the Dalai Lama, I keep quoting him today because I love this why selfishness thing, but we all are the same. We all want happiness. We all just want a little bit of happiness. And we are all suffering. And there's a struggle. And we get to learn how to not struggle so much with the struggle, somebody said. Oh, a beautiful Rinpoche the other day I had on a podcast. Nizar Rinpoche. Just take it a little easier on yourself around the struggle with the struggle. You know, I thought that was so
great.
Yeah, that was so great. Yeah, absolutely, 100%, 100%.
Raghu,
nice seeing you again. My God, you look so great. Yeah, you're thinner. Maybe you've been losing weight.
Quit drinking.
Oh, good. Really?
I haven't had a drink in like 8 months, and I lost all that booze weight that I put on over the pandemic. It just melted off, and now I'm like. Yeah, you lose weight when you quit. It's weird. I know a lot of people probably don't know this, but drinking every day is not good for you. It's like it could be bad for you. I don't know. I've been trying to contact some people in the medical community because I don't think they're aware of the fact that like alcohol is poisonous, but hopefully they'll get the word will get out. Because
it'll get there. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Raghu. You look great too. You look great. I miss you. I wish you lived out here in Austin. I wish we could go shooting together.
Shooting?
You know, at a gun range.
Oh,
do some barbecuing. Like,
this is what you do. You move to Texas and you're shooting shit and barbecuing stuff. That's good. Oh, God. All right. I'm going to sign off. And it was so great to be here. And
Raghu, thank you so much. And you are the best. I'm so lucky to have you as my friend. Thank you so much.
You. Love you.
Love you. That was Raghu Marcus, everybody. Big thank you to all our sponsors. And please, if you happen to be in the San Jose area this weekend, that is the weekend of February 23rd, 25th, 26th specifically, come see me. I'm at the San Jose Improv with William Montgomery. Subscribe to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. And thank you for listening. See you next week. Hare Krishna.